Let's go to some of the chapters in your book. First, you have three pillars upon which society rests. Why don't you tell us in a nutshell?
Well, that opening chapter is about what I call the five pillars of decent and dynamic societies. And three of those pillars, I think, are pillars of decency. These are principles and institutions without which you cannot have a decent society. The first of them is this. It is respect for the human person as such. That is, respect for the profound, inherent, and equal dignity of each and every member of the human family. If you miss that one, if a society fails in its institutions, in its commitments, in the consciousness of its people, to hold fast to the principle of respect for the human person, you cannot have a decent society. I don't care what else you have. You have democracy, you have a flourishing economy, you're not going to have a decent society. We see this if we look at societies that have abandoned this or lost this principle of the inherent equality and dignity of the human person. The person is suddenly transformed from what he should be, that is an end in himself, to which other things are means, to a means to other things. So in fascist totalitarianism, for example, the individual, the human person, is made just a cog in the wheel to serve the ends of the fatherland or the fascist state or the Führer. On the left in communism, another totalitarian system, you find the same thing. The person is now relativized, relegated to the status of a cog in the wheel, a mere instrumentality, a mere means, to the collective goal of producing somewhere down the line the communist utopia. Even in a liberal democratic society, where a utilitarian ethic slips in, as it has so much in our own society, what happens is, again, the human person gets relativized, neglected, reduced to the status of a mere means. And so you would get the rise of things like eugenics, for example, or the unlimited abortion license, euthanasia of frail elderly people who are in the way and suddenly are regarded no longer as
persons. Or frail newborns, as one of your colleagues, Peter Singer, would argue.
Yes, even infant. I mean, human beings now, if they're not good enough, become what the Nazis called useless eaters. What's the point of continuing their lives? We can kill them, sometimes kill them as a blessing to them, as a mercy to them. Their own lives aren't worth living, and by the way, they're in the way of our goals. So that's the very first pillar. It's respect for the dignity of the person.
Or the infinite preciousness of the individual.
And number two is the institution of the family based on marriage. The marriage-based family, Dennis, is, in my view, the original and best department of health, education, and welfare. It performs the function of transmitting the fundamental habits of mind, the virtues that every other institution of society depends on, whether it are business firms and the economy, whether it's the legal system, whether it's the political system, but which none of those institutions of society can themselves produce. If there are to be basically conscientious, decent, honest, hardworking, responsible, reliable persons who exemplify compassion and justice and a concern for others and self-respect and respect for others, it's going to be the family that produces them, or they're not going to be produced at all. And we've seen where the family breaks down, where it fails to form, where there's widespread family fragmentation, fatherlessness, out-of-wedlock births. We've seen the consequences. Daniel Patrick Moynihan in 1965 predicted them in the famous Moynihan Report.
Yeah, and he was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat and he was a liberal, but he saw it coming. He said, look, it was at the point at which the out-of-wedlock birth rate in the black community had reached 25%. This is 1965. Moynihan said, what you're going to get is despair, drug abuse, violence, delinquency, crime, incarceration in a vicious cycle. And of course, that is exactly what happened. Every institution of society depends on the functioning of the family. And when the family breaks down, we all suffer. Of course, the poorest and most vulnerable suffer more than anyone else.
All right, we'll be back in a moment. Hold on there. Infinite preciousness of the individual?
Yes, the human person.
Of the human person, right. Then second is the family, based on the marriage of a man and a woman and children. That is that correct?
Yep.
And you used the phrase, forgive me, we'll get to the third in a moment, but I just wanted to say something and have you comment. The family, you said, is the best health, education, and welfare department that has ever existed.
It's the original and best. The government, if the family breaks down, Dennis, it's not as if no one will come in. Someone will come in to try to fulfill the functions, the health, education, and welfare functions of the family. And you know who that will be. That will be government.
Right.
Now, government will do its best, but it will do it badly. And things will not be nearly as good, especially for the poorest and most vulnerable sectors of any community. That's why I say to our libertarian friends, and I don't know why they have so much trouble getting this through their heads. I say to our libertarian friends, if you believe in limited government, then far from supposing that you can simply write off marriage and not care about it, the institution of marriage, or let it be defined or treated however anybody wants to be treated, you should be in the forefront of protecting marriage and helping to rebuild a vibrant marriage culture, because limited government is impossible without the institutions of civil society, beginning with marriage, doing their jobs.
Yep.
Because the state's going to come in, and state power will grow for two reasons. One, to provide what the family is no longer there to provide, social welfare programs, and two, increase security and policing and incarceration. And those are expensive. That means taxation goes up, and limited government is lost. So far from being antithetical, economic and social conservatism presuppose each other.
That's right. Oh, God, is it good to hear from someone else.
Yeah.
What's the third pillar?
The third pillar is a fair, effective, uncorrupted, and limited system of law and government. That's absolutely crucial for any decent society. And that's true for two reasons, Dennis. Not simply because you need a government to preserve order, though you do. You also need a government, a fair, effective, uncorrupted government, but a limited government, to coordinate all sorts of different aspects of human behavior for the sake of the common good. Take, for example, the elementary example of regulation of traffic, you know, regulation on the highways. We need to be able to transport ourselves and goods safely on the highway, both for the sake of human health and safety and also to have an efficient economy. Well, for that to happen, there needs to be a scheme of coordination. We can't simply all go out there with goodwill, doing the best we can, driving our cars without any regulations. You got to decide, for example, whether we're going to drive on the right side of the road or left side of the road. Doesn't matter which one you choose. It's not a moral issue. But you've got to choose one or the other, and then that's got to be mandatory. Well, that's an elementary coordination function of law. At the same time, it must be limited. Otherwise, government becomes the enemy of the family and of civil society because it usurps the authority of those crucial institutions of civil society and undermines them, instrumentalizes them, and in the end, destroys them, leaving nothing between the individual and the raw power of the state.
Where does religion play a role here?
Religion is one of the key institutions of civil society. There's probably no institution that is more important as assisting the fundamental role of the family than the institutions of religion. Religions are critical. A flourishing religious life is really critical in assisting the family to transmit to each new generation of citizens the idea that human beings do have fundamental worth and dignity. That first pillar, that preciousness of the human being. Different religions will express it differently, but they're trying to capture the same insight. And Judaism, and of course then Christianity picks this up from Judaism, it's the idea that the individual, the human person, is made in the very image and likeness of God, the divine ruler and creator of the universe. Well, you want that to be inculcated in people, first of all because it's true, and second of all because it's the foundation for self-respect and respect of others and all the other virtues that society needs in its citizens.